The most trusted and longest-running sports talk show in Tennessee. From the Budweiser studios of Cumulus Broadcasting, this is Sports Talk with John Wilkerson and Jimmy Hines on Sports Radio WNML.
Number two as Sports Talk begins. I'm John Wilkerson. Vince Ferrara pinch hitting for Jimmy Hyams. And Vince, we go to the Stanley Fencing and Gates hotline to be joined by a very special guest.
That's right. Let's talk about Tennessee from the national standpoint with one of the best in the business. He's the national recruiting coordinator for ESPN. Craig Hobart joins us on the show. Craig, Vince, and John here in, well, on the air in Knoxville. I'm down in Tampa, and John's in Knoxville. But how you doing, Craig?
I'm doing great, guys. How are you been?
Doing well,
thank
you.
We've been good. Hope the Hobart family and everybody close by safe in your area?
Yeah. Luckily, I could say been weathering the interesting 2020 well so far, so I appreciate it. But yeah, all is good.
Good. Before we get into Tennessee, obviously want to get your thoughts on this 2021 class for the Vols and also some targets and looking back on that 2020 class as well for Tennessee. But I want to start with a couple of big picture things with you. With that rush of all those commitments that we saw a month or two ago during the pandemic, we saw maybe a lot more than what a lot of analysts thought we'd see during that period. Do you expect that we will see a lot more decommitments than normal as we go down the stretch to get to that, at least the early signing period?
Yeah, I think, you know, for recruiting fans and college football fans, I think probably it's smart to anticipate a pretty wild fall. Now, we don't know what is going to happen because every day things seem to change when we think we have things figured out in terms of how things are going with the pandemic. You know, there always seems to be a new twist. But I think roughly commitments over the spring from March through June were up about 40%. And if you think about it, the recruiting calendar had already been pretty accelerated to begin with. But I think a couple of reasons for that. We've seen now the dead period continue to be extended through August. So that no longer allows players to get on campus and to get around coaches. So I think you've seen a little bit of players panicking a little bit, wanting to make sure they try to save their spot at the very least. That's not to mean that every commitment is not 100% or legit, but I think there's a lot of kids out there right now seeing other players committing, seeing kind of the uptick in commitments and wanting to kind of maybe feel like they've got their spot and then feel how things go the rest of the way. I think the lack of in-person contact has coaches reaching out even more to prospects. So I think in some instances you may get prospects just tired of being contacted, being on the phone, so wanting to commit and kind of maybe slow things down and kind of get a little bit of a breather on their end. And then you just, like I said, I said a second ago, we've seen recruiting kind of get accelerated before, a lot more commitments early on. So I think you're also just seeing kind of the normal flow of kids knowing where they want to go and commit. But I think all those three things converging together, I've seen a lot of commitments already at this point. And if players are able to get on campus in the fall, then I think you're going to start seeing, A, players looking at other options, as well as some schools potentially wanting to maybe reshuffle their classes a little bit and get on some guys they may not have room for now.
With all of the missed evaluation periods for the coaches and the schools, that they're not able to see these kids in person, and the desire, I'm sure, to have some of that at some point before they bring these kids in as signees, what do you think can be done in terms of evaluation periods or and even the present calendar of how the dates look like, including that early signing period?
Yeah, I think that's the first thing. You know, I have no information on this, but my initial reaction goes to, if players can't get on campus in the fall or maybe not until mid-fall, you know, is there still maybe the push for the early signing period just this cycle and maybe just go back to the February period and give everybody a little bit more time to kind of cross their T's and dot their I's? I don't know if that's the case. I would actually be surprised if that would happen, but I would think that would be a potential option, how things maybe pan out here over the next 6 months. But I think, guys, the biggest problem for coaches is you can watch film and you could still kind of gauge the athleticism. I think the biggest myth is not being able to get around these players and judging the intangibles and the character and how they may fit your program. I think that's really the biggest hurdle for coaches right now, is maybe flying blind a little bit and losing those opportunities to get around those players, get them on your campus, get them around your support staff, get them around your current players, and learning more about them. And I think coaches are having to work a little bit harder to try to dig up that information, find out as much as they can about the players, to try to make sure they're making the right choices and finding the guys who are the right program fits. And so just those missed opportunities, even with the NCAA calendar really restricting those in a normal time, now not getting them at all, whether it be spring official visits, getting them on campus for summer camps, which are now gone, and the potential of maybe, you know, we'll see how things go in the fall. But I really think that's their biggest struggle, is you can watch a lot of film and you can kind of gauge that. I'm sure they're missing a bit, just being able to get them on their campus and measure them and find out exactly how tall they are, how much they weigh. But ultimately, it's just being able to be around them and just finding out if they're the right fit in terms of a character standpoint for their program.
Craig, very much appreciate your time, and it's good to chat with you. With the fact that there has been such a different landscape this year without there being spring football, I guess, at the high school level as well, and summer prospect showcases and things like that, how different has it been from your vantage point and what you normally go through in these mid-year months to prepare or adjust your top 300 and so on?
Yeah, it's been a little bit difficult. We were able to get in about five camps before everything shut down. We were out in California, Arizona, South Florida, Orlando. So four camps we were able to get in before. So we were able to get a good feel out west. You know, we've actually, as I'm sure you guys are aware watching the news, there's been some parts of the country that were hit hard early and have kind of seen a little bit of a lull or maybe be past that, while other parts of the country are now starting to see things starting to kind of swell a bit in terms of positive tests. So we've also been trying to find our spots to get in. We've actually done a few camps throughout parts of the country. We were just in Atlanta a week ago, had quite a few prospects from the state of Tennessee there. Because of that, we've had to make changes. We're bringing players in, not in a total camp, but within position groups. So there's really only 25 players going at a time, and they're working in groups of 10. You know, no one-on-one, nothing with pads. So trying to incorporate social distancing. But it's been helpful to kind of get out and see some players these last few weeks in certain parts of the country in a different format, but still being able to see them kind of move around, run, and those type of things. So that's been helpful. But just like the coaches, it's been a different landscape and just kind of adjusting and relying more on film more than ever.
With the fact that Tennessee has been able to put together a very impressive group of commitments so far, and there's still, you know, fluidity involved in the class. Some will stick with Tennessee. Others may head somewhere else as Tennessee adds to their number of commitments. But I'm just wondering, there's been such a presence of, and perhaps it's the fact that so many of these prospects are very familiar and comfortable with either FaceTime or video chats, different things like that. Do you get the feeling that there's any more, prospect recruiting going on within, I guess, their peer groups compared to how it normally operates? Or is this just now kind of, this is something that happens more and more from one year to the next, that once somebody commits, then they start chatting up other guys to say, come join me?
Yeah, that's always a part of a recruiting. I mean, prospects are always going to talk to each other. They're always going to kind of recruit each other. You know, I think, you know, if you're a Tennessee fan, you really saw it up hand. I think it was Kamar Wilcoxon, who obviously now at this point has gone back to Florida. His recruitment is very interesting, but he kind of kicked off a wave. I think he was the initial guy at the end of April, the last week or so of April into May, where Tennessee really went on a hot run, and you kind of saw the momentum that they were able to ride on the recruiting trail to help build what is right now a top five class. But you know, that's always part of it. But one thing I've learned, guys, over the years is you'll hear a lot of players say, hey, we're a package deal, or so-and-so is in my ear. I think more often than not, though, even with that, I think players ultimately end up making the decision that they feel is the best for them. So it plays a role, but and I think coaches always want to find those one or two guys in that class who can kind of be that Pied Piper, that anchor, who help them recruit. But that's always been a part of it, and that's part of it now in these different times as well.
Talking recruiting with Craig Hobart, who is the national director, national recruiting coordinator for ESPN here on Sports Talk, Vince Ferrar and John Wilkerson. So, Craig, let's talk about the 2021 class, and I want to start with Caden Salter, a Tennessee quarterback commit that's competing at the Elite 11 competition in Nashville. Give us your breakdown on him as a prospect.
Yeah, he, you know, first of all, just starts with excellent athleticism. He's a guy, when he has a football in his hand, he can be really dynamic, make a lot of plays. I think he's really been developing as a quarterback. I think he's a guy, though, as you bring on campus, I mean, he's still got his senior season to go and a chance to continue to grow as a player. But I think he's more as a developmental type player, or maybe even potentially down the road, fitting into maybe kind of that mold of Holiday, who they signed in this 2020 class, a guy who was a really dynamic player. Talking about Jimmy Holiday out of Mississippi. Really just a tremendous high school quarterback, very dynamic, get on campus, maybe potentially move to receiver. I think that Salter is a little bit further along, and I think would certainly be a guy that at first you'd really bring in and try to develop at the quarterback position as he's continued to kind of grow and not just be an excellent athlete, but really start to make strides as a quarterback as well. But I don't know if that's a guy that you would look at that position as an early impact guy.
What do you think of Hudson Wolf, the in-state tight end that Tennessee added most recently?
Yeah, I think he's a player. He's got really good size. I like his body control, his hands. I don't know if he's necessarily that type of seam stretcher, that vertical threat at the tight end position. I think he's got to build up a little bit, but he's a big target. Does a really nice job. He can extend, catch the ball away from his frame. I really like the upside he has as a blocker. I think he can work on some technical things, but when you're looking at a tight end, you know, a lot of tight ends, you know, they want – at the high school level, you want to see them. They want to catch the football. They want to put those on their highlights, you know. But once you get into college, you got to be able to contribute as a blocker as well. And the more well-rounded you are, the more valuable you are. And I think when I see Wolf on film, he's a guy who's a willing blocker, and he works on his technique and really makes strides and grow and become productive in that aspect of his game as well.
You guys wrote about on ESPN, I guess it was Tom Van Haren, about Tennessee being one of those teams that's off to a fast start in the 2021 class. Is there anything you're looking out for down the stretch in terms of targets to maybe complete this class for Tennessee, or even the importance of holding on to someone that is committed right now but is an important piece to hold on to?
Yeah, you know, as we kind of started out talking about, I think everybody in college, for all the college coaches, are kind of preparing themselves for what could be an interesting fall. I think Tennessee, you know, listen, they've already got a big class at 23 commits, so there's not a lot of room, but I would imagine that there's going to be some changes along the way. I think, obviously, Terrence Lewis right at the top, the five-star linebacker, was a huge pickup out of South Florida. I think that's someone to obviously watch, not saying that he's looking around, but as things kind of go around, that's certainly a guy who's kind of anchoring your class. And I think, you know, as they go around, they're in the mix for quite a few guys. I think that Demarius McGee out of Florida is a guy who's been a, I don't want to say a late riser because we're only in summer, but over the spring months, he's been a guy who's really kind of seen his stock rise. He's a four-star right now. I could see him moving into the ESPN 300, the next update later this summer. He's had Tennessee in his top five, a guy who, when I first watched him, only had an Appalachian State offer, but has really started to explode. Is Christian Zachary, ESPN 300, kind of edge defender, really flexible, explosive. Tennessee was his first offer amongst the SEC teams, so we'll see if potentially that can kind of help them down the stretch here. But I think you can really have enough, you can never have enough of those edge, kind of explosive edge defenders. You know, Leonard Taylor's a guy who's been in the mix, but I think he'll be tough to pull out of Florida. Isaiah Johnson, a really talented corner out of West Virginia. He's been kind of tough to get a read on. but Tennessee has continually been in the mix for him. So there's some players out there, some big names that they're very much in the mix for. Not a lot of room right now, but certainly room to be able to put in two or three more guys and to see how things ultimately change. But I think the big thing is the main focus is to keep together the class that you have and try to supplement it down the stretch with two or three of those big names that they've had. And I think one thing that Tennessee has done really well that these guys have seen since Jeremy Pruitt has taken over is they've closed really well, whether it be in February or during the early signing period. So it'll be interesting to see how they navigate what's a pretty full class right now into that early signing period. But I think the key thing is keeping together what right now is a top five class. So you would try to keep that together first and then add to it as you go along.
Craig, last year the 2020 class had 23 players in it and a pretty good group there as well. I wonder if, in knowing what you know about all those players, if you feel like they're a couple that you feel like would have the best chance to be early or first-year contributors out of that group in that 2020 class that's going to be freshmen this year.
Yeah, you know, I think what's going to be interesting, guys, too, is we're talking about the changes and losing camps and all that. We're also lost, you know, a lot of spring football, and I think it's going to be interesting to see how that impacts potentially freshmen having an impact in the fall, especially those early enrollees. You look at a guy maybe like a Harrison Bailey, a really polished quarterback, a guy who won a lot on campus already, you know, what role he may be able to play. But when I look at this Tennessee class that is going to be there this year, I think there are about four or five guys that jump out to me. One is right at the top, Keyshawn Lawrence. He's lengthy, he's fluid, he's really athletic, whether it's in the secondary or on special teams. I think he's going to be a guy that's going to be really difficult to keep on the sidelines. Along the defensive line, Dominic Bailey, the ESPN 300 D tackle out of St. Francis Academy, where they're having a lot of success recruiting right now. At the Under Armour All-American game, he's really impressive. He's explosive. I wouldn't be surprised if he works his way into the rotation really early on. Wide receiver was a need for them. They're losing a few guys there. They signed several in this class. A guy who may not be the highest rated amongst that group, but I think could really be an early contributor, is Jalen Hyatt out of South Carolina. He's a polished route runner. He's got outstanding speed. We're talking about a guy who's a sub-11-second, 100-meter type runner. I know they also really liked him from a character and a tangible and a leadership standpoint. So I think he checks a lot of boxes as a guy at the receiver position who can come in and play a role really quickly. And then the other guy is Cooper Mays. I think if you're a Tennessee fan, you got to be really excited about this offensive line group coming back. We'll still wait and see what happens with Cade Mays. But his brother, Cooper, another guy who was an early enrollee, I think a really kind of smart, heady player, really strong, could be versatile, whether at the center position, he competes there for that spot, or providing depth at the interior of the offensive line. Cooper Mays, I think, is a guy that you'll see, at least in that two deep, at the very least, contributing along the offensive line. So those are four guys I think I'd really watch for.
Craig, one more question for me, and you talked about it with this staff that several times they find themselves being the first to offer from the SEC or the second. They're usually very early in on those that they identify and think will flourish in either their offense or defensive scheme. And I'm just wondering, how important is that when you take a look at a staff like Jeremy Pruitt and his assistants, that they can identify guys and then start to build a relationship? As they've turned in some surprises, whether it's be December signing period or the traditional February signing day, they normally are able to grab one that perhaps wasn't in the cards, essentially, for Tennessee to land, but because they've been able to build a relationship over time. How important is that, do you think, in recruiting these days?
Oh, it's huge. Recruiting is all about relationships. I know that's why sometimes I feel for these kids because, you know, they decommit, or when a coach leaves, you know, they're kind of in a position, well, you know, I signed with this coach, and everybody says, well, you should sign with the school, not the coaching staff. Things change. But it's a really kind of a double-edged sword because recruiting is all about relationships. So it's understandable to see how these young men get attached to whether that recruiting coach or their position coach throughout the process. And when they leave, they feel like, well, you know, this may not be what I signed up for. So I think Tennessee has done an outstanding job of identifying. And I think even though we've been in what's a really tough year in 2020 in terms of recruiting and having to adapt to what has been the pandemic and losing opportunity to be around players or get them on campus. The reason why they're currently sitting at number two and with a class with several, with nearly 25 players already, is that it's because of those early relationships that they built. Those paid dividends in the month of April, in the month of May, where they were able to get those players to commit, even though they may have lost opportunities to get them on campus for spring official visits. They had those relationships already built, and they made those players still feel comfortable to be able to want to commit. And I think if you're a Tennessee fan, you got to be really excited about the job that they're doing, as you mentioned, in IDing players. A lot of times recruiting can kind of be a guy gets hot, everybody jumps on board, and sometimes it could take guts to want to kind of go out on a ledge and offer a guy who doesn't have a lot of offers yet, that you see something that other schools aren't. And I think Tennessee has shown that they're not afraid to kind of be the first in on a guy because they're believing what their staff and what their eyes are seeing and what their staff is telling each other that they believe in a prospect. So they're going to go out there and be the first to offer. And sometimes, you know, that can pay dividends in making a player feel like, you know what, I've got a lot of offers, but you were the first one to really believe in me. It doesn't always pay off, but I certainly think it helps.
That's Craig Hobart. He's the ESPN College Football National Recruiting Coordinator. He's got such a great staff there at ESPN, including our friend Tom Luganville. Craig, really appreciate it. Really nice of you to hop on with us. Have a safe and healthy summer, and we'll catch up with you again real soon.
Always enjoy talking Tennessee football with you guys. Be safe as well. Thanks for having me on.
Thank you.
Thanks, Craig. And you can follow Craig on Twitter. It's Craig, C-R-A-I-G, Hobart, H-A-U-B-E-R. They do an outstanding job and great insight from a national perspective there, John.
Very much so. Appreciate your putting that together. That's Vince Ferrara. I'm John Wilkerson. We'll get a break and be back with more as you listen to Sports Talk on 99.1 The Sports Animal.
The Sports Animal and Alexa are best friends. Just tell her, Alexa, enable the 99.1 The Sports Animal skill.
Skill enabled.
Then anytime you want immediate Tennessee sports info, say, Alexa, play 99.1 The Sports Animal.
Okay, playing 99.1 The Sports Animal.
Sports Talk continues. I'm John Wilkerson. Vince Ferrara pinch hitting for Jimmy Hyams. And goodness gracious, we just keep rolling right along. We really appreciate all the time we got from Craig Halbert, and just so much good information. And Vince, it'll be something to see as we have talked earlier in today's show about exactly how things might progress when it comes to the fall football season and the TSSAA. I could not imagine trying to keep up with all 50 states and all the top prospects when you have great differences from one section of the country to another, as well as one state to perhaps even one that's next door.
Well, and look, without those camps in the summer and without the feedback of coaches having been to see those players on their campuses and those in-person evaluations, without that information there, now the coaches are going to really rely on high school football. Well, guess what looks like it's starting to happen already? Impact of high school football. So now you, on top of already missing all of that evaluation, now you may be talking about even less tape in games to be able to evaluate those prospects. And that's in our current scenario now. Who knows? We hope not. Pray that it doesn't get shortened even more than that. But it could be worse in other states at all. Some others may not be impacted whatsoever. But this could be a even bigger roll of the dice for a lot of schools. And Craig Hubbard mentioned the character of those guys. Yeah, you can talk to them and their family in a Zoom meeting, but sometimes you get the best vibes when you're in person with someone as to really what they're all about. And a lot of these coaches are missing out on that. So it's gonna make this an even bigger question mark, and coaches are going to need to rely on their instincts maybe as much as their eyes and their opinions on guys' measurables and skill sets. So we'll see how it plays out. And I thought it was interesting, too, in him bringing up the 20 some of the 2020 guys that will are part of will be the freshman class this year. He mentioned a lot of the guys that I've talked about and we've discussed, John, and Keyshawn Lawrence and Jalen Hyatt, Dominic Bailey. Those are all names that I do think are right there at the top. And you can vote for your Vol freshman that you think will have the biggest impact on the 2020 season when it's all said and done. All 23 of them are listed at 99.1thesportsanimal.com. Scroll down to the bottom right. You'll see the poll question there. You can vote. Guess who is leading that vote? Guy that throws the football is leading the voting there. That's not a surprise, but maybe you can share your opinion if you think the biggest impact freshman is going to be someone else or if you think it's going to be Harrison Bailey.
All right. And, of course, folks can find great content all the time at 99.1thesportsanimal.com.
That's right. We got blogs. We've got a podcast. There's a lot of national stories, story on our website about Jadeveon Clowney and his consideration still for a few teams, the Titans included in that. So you can find a lot on the Vols, on the SEC, on our all audio. There's video section there on the website as well. Plus, there's a lot of national stories there. You can get Braves news. You can get NFL news, college football news, videos there with other things going on. There's maybe a lot more info there than what you might think. So spend some time on it and see our great content, which is updated every day.
That's Vince Ferrara. I'm John Wilkerson. When we return, we hope to catch up with Ball for Life, Alaric Solari. Stay with us on Sports Talk on 99.1, The Sports Animal. Sports Talk continues. I'm John Wilkerson, Vince Ferrara pinch hitting for Jimmy Hyams, and we are thrilled to welcome back to the program via the Stanley Fencing and Gates hotline, now member of the Minnesota Twins organization, Vol for Life, Alaric Solari. Alaric, how are you?
I'm doing well. How are y'all?
Doing quite well. Thank you so much for your time. Hope you and your family are still doing well with all this.
Oh, doing amazing. Still a thrill.
Well, glad to hear it. You were gracious enough to join us with Garrett Crochet before the draft to talk about the just the experience and preparing for and getting ready for what was a very different draft, as different there as there's ever been. But tell us, what was it like in the second round, second night of the draft, when you got to hear your name called by the Minnesota Twins?
It was amazing just to have all my family around me. I had ended up getting the hotel for some of my friends and family, and we just watched it there. And from my advisors and everything, like, I was expecting to get drafted in the third, fourth round, but getting that second round call, it was definitely surprising, and it was something that I won't forget.
Did you have much conversation at all with the Twins in the build-up to the draft?
Yes, definitely. They're one of the most interested programs that had hit me up. It was them, the Blue Jays, and I would definitely say the Pirates that gave me the most interest. So I had a feeling about them.
Alaric, is it true that when you found out that the Twins were drafting you, you were getting a haircut?
yes, I was. My my cousin, he was actually cutting my hair in the restroom. And I had forgot my phone in the meeting room, and my dad had ran in, and he was like, "Hey, like pick up your phone. They're telling you to pick up your phone right now." And I ran in and looked at my phone. I had 3 missed calls, so, I mean, I had to get back to him, and believe it or not, they were talking to me about the second round, and the Twins were interested.
So take us through what a phone call with a club is prior to being drafted, because in the NFL and some other sports, it's just a matter of, hey, we're getting ready to take you, are you happy to jump on board with us? But in Major League Baseball, there seems to be just a little bit more of a what if. Hey, what do you think about us drafting you? Take us through that phone conversation.
To be honest, I didn't get to talk to anybody before they drafted me. I actually got to talk to my advisors. They were the only ones that had talked to the Twins at the time. But after the draft, they had just let me know how fired up they was to have me, and then Some of the people that hit me up said that they didn't believe I was going to be on the board when their pick got there. So, I mean, they're just excited to have me in the program. I'm sorry, but it was just amazing to hear from them and everything.
What was the feedback, Alaric, that they told you after they drafted you about the reasons why they thought you were so worthy of that pick and had the qualities they were looking for in a player?
They like how I could play almost anywhere on the field. They said I'm a good utility guy. I could play almost anywhere on the field. And then they said they like the way I hit, which I figured they like the way I hit fastballs because, I mean, I kind of kill them. So I was hoping that would be one reason. But besides that, that's pretty much it. And then, I mean, just from the phone conversations with everybody, they just got to know who I was from the short amount of time we had. So they liked me as a person also. That was a big part of it.
Alaric, what was it like to connect with advisors and to go through that process? And what's it been like to now have representation as a pro ball player?
To be honest, it was pretty rough at the beginning. Just going from junior college to the University of Tennessee, I had two advisors, and they did a lot for me. I'm not bagging on them at all. They did as much as they could, but going into it, I just felt that CAA with Andrew Nicario and Tom Hagen, they had the best interest and the best opportunities for me. So I feel like that was a better opportunity, and I took that. So
yeah.
Having that process, it was amazing. Just seeing the difference going from me being drafted from San Jack to being a second round pick. So it was a great experience.
What was it like in the build up to the draft? I mean, there was Tim Corbin, the Vanderbilt coach, who was doing some analysis for the MLB Network, and he said that you were one of the best bats available that perhaps wasn't getting as much discussion as possible. What was it like to hear the high points and the compliments of your game as the draft approached?
It's amazing just to hear praise from one of the greatest coaches in college baseball. And, I mean, I was recruited by Coach Corbin when I was in high school, so I actually have always kind of had a good connection with him, and just hearing stuff like that, it keeps you going as a player and just shows you, like, it only just takes one team to find you and give you the opportunity. So just with all the build-up coming around, it was definitely something to look forward to, and I was definitely fired up to be a part of the progress or the program.
Alaric, as you know, the Twins have a long-time, highly regarded scout in Jack Powell who works the area. How frequently did you converse with him leading up to the draft?
I told multiple people this. He's definitely the best scout that I have talked to in the area, without a doubt, just because I feel like I can talk to him just about almost anything that wasn't baseball related. Like, me and him would sit and just talk about him and his granddaughter, which, I mean, he loves her to death. He'll sit there and talk to her. I mean, talk to me about her for like 15, 20 minutes, and we were just talking about life, not even baseball. So just talking to him and just knowing that he's there for you as a person and not just as a player, it was definitely something that I cherished and I thank till this day.
Do you think the Minnesota Twins appreciate the swag that you bring to the baseball field?
I hope so. They made their own little video with the bat flip, so seeing that was cool, and seeing all the attention I had on that was pretty cool too. So from the looks of it, I hope they do like my swag that I'll bring to the team.
After you were drafted, it didn't take long for you to hammer out the deal, and then it had to be really exciting. What was it like to get on a plane, fly from Houston to Minneapolis, and officially sign with the Twins?
It was definitely exciting just being able to go from one city to another, because I haven't been to Minneapolis, and it's a beautiful city. It's spread out. Honestly, the city is more like a highway, if we're going to be honest. So just seeing that is beautiful with all the space around it. One of the most beautiful fields I've seen. I've seen a lot of baseball fields, but that's by far the most beautiful field. So just being able to have that experience, and I know some people didn't have that experience being able to travel up. I mean, it was amazing. I actually didn't have my parents that went with me, but I mean, besides that, it was one of the best experiences of my life, definitely.
Our guest is Alaric Solari, Vol for Life, and now a member of the Minnesota Twins organization. And goodness, and they after you sign your deal, you then have the photo shoot where that's a pretty tight look in that Twins gear. How much fun was that?
Oh, no, that was amazing. It was actually me and one of my teammates that signed. Also, his name's Marco. He's out of Laredo, Texas. So me and him actually got to have a good conversation. And like I said, the video shoot was amazing.
And then you, I love the quote that you came out with after you signed, and that is you tweeted it, said, "You still have to outplay me, my guys. I haven't had money in 20 years. You think 1 year going to change anything?" And then, of course, you were just telling the clowns to get ready. How excited are you for this opportunity?
Oh, it's amazing. Just because I've always been motivated to play in the pros, and I just wanted people to know that like money isn't something that's going to change what I do and what I love. I've always had the love for the game, and it won't change just because of a paycheck. So that was really my thing right there. And I mean, I just got a lot of fire under me, and I'm ready to get this season going. If we kind of have a season, whatever goes, we'll go with the flow. But I'm just ready to get back out on the field.
Well, Alaric, that leads me to my next question. The Twins have a 60-man roster, and you were just drafted in the second round. Typically, you'd head to you know, rookie ball or somewhere in the organization in the minor leagues, but now there's not going to be a minor leagues. What have the Twins told you about the plan for you to continue to try to get some baseball, some work in?
To be honest, I talked to a lot of the guys yesterday on a Zoom call, and they were kind of just running me through some of the stuff. So I'm not really sure about what I'm going to be doing in the next couple of days or the next couple of weeks. But as soon as I do, you will know it'll be on social media. And I'm pretty sure Vol Baseball will be out with it too.
Well, tell us how happy you are for your guys that were drafted as well, and Garrett Crochet and Zach Daniels.
Oh, it was amazing just because they were actually my roommates the first year that I came to campus. Zach Daniels, he was one of my roommates, and Gary. So just seeing them get drafted is something that like we talked about, long nights and we worked for. So, I mean, I'm so proud of them guys. And like I said, as you were saying on me with the 60-man roster, Garrett had just a good shot to go to. I mean, he's a lefty that throws Chet, so I mean, I wouldn't doubt him being in the 60-man roster, and that's something that you can look forward to also.
And you and Garrett are teammates with CAA, right? You're represented by the same group?
Yeah, without a doubt.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. That's also got to be a real comforting feeling. And then you also had a couple of teammates that also are starting their pro careers as they signed free agency. What was it like to see Chase and Cody get their opportunities?
Oh, it was amazing just because Chase, he's always one of those dudes that keeps his head down and just works and gets everything done. So seeing him get that opportunity, it was amazing just for him and his family. And I'm sure that he's going to cash in on that opportunity and do what he has to do. And also the same for Cody. He was always a dude that I thought he could get some more pitching time, and he would have been a big, big piece in our pitching rotation this year if we would have got to play more. But I mean, just seeing that opportunity for him, it's amazing with the short amount of time he had to throw this year.
You don't have to share anything if you're not comfortable with this, but you've signed a pro contract. You have a signing bonus. Is there anything that you want to do to celebrate, or is it all about, hey, I'm just going to work and be ready that if I get to go play somewhere, you'll be ready for that? Is there anything special that you've got planned, just a little way to celebrate?
I was actually trying to do a first investment and get a Whataburger in Knoxville on campus, but I seen on Twitter somebody may have already like tried to put it together. So I mean, if I could try to get that out, and hopefully somebody from that department is listening to this, I would love to try to work with somebody and get a Whataburger at the University of Tennessee in Knoxville. So if y'all can try to help me with that and get that out to somebody, that'll be greatly appreciated.
Amen. Well, I'll say this. If that happens, I think they've already set aside the number one for Condridge Holloway, but Alaric Solari goes immediately on the fence if he gets a Whataburger in Knoxville.
Hey, Alaric, talk about what not only Coach Vitello, but that coaching staff under Coach V, what they meant to you in your college experience.
They meant a lot to me, to be honest, because like I said, I've always had like great coaches coming in, but like I never really had like a form of discipline going into junior college. And when I got there, it kind of wasn't what I expected. It was a good team and everything, but not what I expected coaching-wise. So, I mean, getting to the University of Tennessee and getting everything done to where, like, in the weight room you had a strict order and a lifting day, like, it's just stuff like that that makes you, like, just feel, like, more wanted as a player. And then, like I said previously, just having a younger coaching staff, like, I think we pretty much have the youngest coaching staff in the SEC. They're really relatable, and they can relate to you like pretty well as a player. So just having that was also a big help, because they were able to relate to me and a lot of my teammates as players and people. So I mean, they definitely did a lot for me as a person and as a player.
Last thing for me, Alaric, I really appreciate your time. So that being said, what does the future hold next season and beyond for University of Tennessee baseball?
Greatness, to be honest. I think they're in great hands. Well, I know they're in great hands. And like I said, it's not really a lot of people they're losing this year. They're only losing five pieces. So, I mean, I have no doubt in my mind Coach V is going to go out and fill those pieces in, and they're going to have a team that's going to be ready to go to Omaha.
Alaric, you do have to share, what was it like to see so many people celebrate your big moment when it's a lifelong dream that comes true? You're drafted in the second round by the Twins, and then not only is it your current teammates, but it's also past teammates, whether it was the Banditos or the Gators, former coaches. How much fun was it to see so many reach out and say, yes, sir?
Oh, no, it was amazing just seeing the support system. And like I'm the type of person, I try to get out to everybody and respond to tweets and messages and stuff. And I got to respond to most of them. And this is for the people, if I didn't get to respond to you, thank you for everything and all the support just for me. Because coming up, I didn't really have a lot of support and all of that. So just having all of that, it was amazing to see. And I mean, that's all I can really say. I'm going to definitely keep carrying on and being a great player, a great person, and keep doing what I need to do.
Well, as it says, you're evolved for life, and you're now with the Twins. We wish you the very best of luck. We look forward to staying in touch, and we'll see you at Whataburger somewhere, sometime. You can mark that down.
Will do. BFL for life. Y'all have a great one.
You too. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Alaric.
No problem. You have a great one. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Alaric Solari joining us on the Stanley Fencing and Gates Hotline. We'll get a break and be back with a final segment to hour number two of Sports Talk on 99.1, The Sports Animal.
You know how to pass the time when you're on the job. With 45 minutes of sports every hour. 99.1, The Sports Animal.
We come back to say so long for hour number two of Sports Talk. I'm John Wilkerson with Vince Ferrara. And Vince, I think that is outstanding to know exactly what was at the top of Alex Solari's mind when it came to, you know what, I've got a little something I can invest, and this is what I want to do. He's got a plan, and I don't think there's any question, a bright future ahead.
Absolutely. Love it. His enthusiasm. I mean, obviously great ability as well. He's a guy that impacts people around him, and just love his energy, his enthusiasm. Great question from you on what he might want to do with now that flow of money. And being a Houston guy, anyone that's been in Texas and in the Southeast that's tried Whataburger, Heather Harrington included, knows how awesome Whataburger is. Many a late night when I lived in Dallas, you know, coming back from the club, dancing or wherever we were at, the drive-thru was always open, and man, was it money. So he knows, and he knows what a hit it would be on campus to have one. So any way we could help, I know I'm all in. That's a great idea.
Yeah, and you got to call the last Tennessee baseball game this season with the ETSU game, and it was so much fun because Solari had just, I mean, he was really locked in. He had crushed some home runs, and one of my favorite clips of video from the season was after that game as Tennessee was getting ready to dive right back into the SEC and take on South Carolina in Columbia. You had Connor Pavlone saying, "I got four," Zach Daniels saying, "I got four," and Alex Solari saying, "I got five."
He had
taken over the team lead in home runs. And my goodness, I just hate that we didn't get to see that offense, which led the nation in runs scored, go up against SEC pitching. I think that would have been so much fun.
Yeah, especially because it's been a while since a team had that kind of long-term potential in the season, postseason, the talent. I mean, it really had come together, and I think they were legit in SEC play. Maybe not won the regular season in SEC, but I think they would have been an above 500 team in conference play, which certainly would have put them in the NCAA tournament. And then after the previous year's disappointment in the regional, I think they would have approached it with an even more motivation and an even better team. So you're right, it is a shame we didn't get to see what they could have done. But a lot of pieces, I've been looking at it, John, a lot of really good pieces back from last year's team, 8 of their top 9 hitters based on average, and the 10th is Alaric Solari, who led the team in home runs and other categories, and then you bring in a really talented recruiting class. That's still going to be an awfully good squad, I think, next year.
Tell you what, why don't we just continue the Tennessee baseball conversation? Tony Vitello joins us to start hour number 3 of Sports Talk. That's next on 99.1, The Sports Animal.